Eastern Seaboard champions. They are from, get this, Hanford, Connecticut. Oh, boy. But I'll tell you what, to prove that my men are fighting champions, we are going to give them the opportunity to show the world here tonight. Let's bring out the Extreme. I need an announcer to work here with me. I don't want to do solo. I don't like that. Zbyszko, you're wearing black. Come on up here. Yeah, I want you. Come on up here. I'm going to give you a chance to call this man. Come on up here. Oh, look at this. Larry, put these headphones on. You're missing some of the greatest action anywhere in the world. The Outsiders.
Short notice, and let me just put it, I'm here because I'm a professional and no other reason.
Then call the action.
Yeah, I'll call the action. Here's a 7-foot-tall coward that just slammed some poor defenseless guy.
What do you mean, coward? The man took a match, put the World Tag Team titles on the line with no prior notice. No time to prepare, no time to scout his opponent. They have wrestled before, but nonetheless,
you could scout these opponents with a blind guy.
Are you saying that the Extreme is not worthy? They are from Stanford, you know.
Well, then they're definitely not worthy.
Look at this. The World Tag Team Champions. Are they not supreme athletes? Are they not the epitome of aggression, perfection, and professionalism?
Well, look, I mean, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, they're two big, strong thugs who have sold their individuality wrestling like pack rats, Mr. Bischoff. That's exactly what they are. Cowards who attack Luger with pipes. That's what they are, Mr. Bischoff.
Did you see it happen? Were you there?
I saw enough.
Look at this. Look at Kevin Nash. One of the most powerful. Look at that. A choke slam. Oh, this is unbelievable. Nash showing Luger how the rack should be done. Paul with a phenomenal choke slam that makes the Giant look like a doorstop in comparison. These two guys are without a doubt the best and scheduled for Super Bowl. Paul and Nash, Giant Luger, although Luger may not be there. Let's see what they have to say.
For the Outsiders, baby. Hey, can I get a word with you guys after that tough match? Here you go. Here's your belt.
Tough match.
And one for you. Now, another Matt Classic match of the year, 4 stars. What are you guys going to say about the Extreme? How do you approach a match like that?
Hey, these guys are unbelievable. But let me make a point. You know, if you people would learn to shut your mouth.
Ooh, rather hostile environment.
I didn't like it too.
At least the people here have common sense.
Tell them, big man. You know, the other day, I opened up Webster's Dictionary. I looked up the word giant. It said goof, goon, dork, fool. They used it in a sentence. Oh, my God. You've got a giant boil on your back. You want to be a giant? You be one. Us, the Outsiders, will just continue being too sweet.
You got it.
Hey, yo. Here's a little lesson in genetics for you, you big goof. Kevin Nash is also 7 feet tall. Except he stopped at the cool stage while you slid on past into the dork meter.
Ooh.
And everybody knows that a couple of Clydesdales, or is it Clydesdales, like you, and that punk Luger with his lame arm can't run with no thoroughbreds. And in finishing this,
Luger, we're real sorry about your injury. You shouldn't spend so much time in the back warming up. Better luck next time, because you know what? We are the sweetest thing going, and we are NWO. Boy,
looks more like the Three Stooges to me.
My girl, come get you, sir.
Will Luger come up with the doctor's release before the end of the evening?
You can let him go without a release.
I hope he does, and we'll be back with more right after this.
But you can let him go without a release.
Oh, we got to protect him.
Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling. I'm your host, JP Jampaz. With me today, two very special guests, New Jersey wrestling legends. They've been tag team champs in the ECWA, NWA New York, NWA New Jersey, all around, NWA 2000, all those leagues. The Extreme, Team Extreme at one point, the Extremist, Ace Darling, and Crowbar, Devin Storm. Guys, welcome. How you doing?
Wow.
John?
Our first ever tag team like interview thing. Like official, you know, like not at like a convention or something like that. This is cool.
Wow, yeah, man. Nice. When was the, by the way, we'll start with Ace, I guess, but when was the last time you guys actually did team together?
Oh,
a long time ago.
2000.
In a galaxy far, far away.
It was for Jim. I'll tell you, it was for Jim Kettner. It was a ladder match with Rob Echoes and Billy Bax. Rob Strauss.
And I think it was pretty damn good match.
2007, 2008-ish.
Great finish, by the way.
What was the finish?
Wow. Climbing up on the ladder, I think Ace had it. I think him and Rob were fighting over the belt, I think. And I powerbombed Billy Bax. And as he came up in a powerbomb,
We were fighting over the belt. Me and Rob, yes. We were in a tug of war. And
I powerbombed Billy Bax, and at the peak of the powerbomb, he grabbed the belt.
Damn.
And he powerbombed them down, took the bump, but they won the match. Sons of bitches. Man.
Now, going back, though, Crowbar. When is the first time you teamed, though? Like, when did you guys first meet? Would it be with Iron Mike Sharp?
Maybe a little bit after. I mean, I started there in 91 and then into 92. I don't even know the exact timeline. Wow, we should have prepped better, huh?
I know exactly. No,
all right.
I joined up to Mike Sharp's school on a Friday,
yeah.
And it was the following Friday you came in. You had your varsity jacket on. It said 92 on the back. It was in the year 1992, and I graduated 1992 as well. So I'm like, oh wow, here's someone I can try and befriend. Someone who's my age, yeah. You know, someone who's, you know, been here for a little bit. And that's how I first met Chris. He walked into Mike Sharp's wrestling school with his football varsity jacket.
And I'm going to use this opportunity to let the whole world know that he bullied me. He harassed me. He hid my – no, he didn't. He was great.
Back in the day, you could, though. You're allowed to, yeah. You're allowed to offend people. In 1992, you can do a lot of crap you can't do in 2023, 2024, or whatever.
He made fun of my mullet, and he made fun of my big nose.
Hey, back in those days, even I was a little bit later than you guys, but for football, the hazing and stuff, the stuff you can get away with that nowadays, forget about it. You wouldn't be able to do that stuff.
Yeah.
He told me, beat a kid. This business ain't for you.
Did you guys start at the same exact time? Did you start for Mike at the same exact time?
No, he was
more or less
before me, though.
Yeah.
So, Crowbar, what did you think about Iron Mike? I mean, he's got a legendary status. He was on WWF TV for, God, almost 15 years straight, basically. I mean, so many people know who he is, whether he won or lost. Everybody knows who he is. But what was, like, the initial getting in there and training with him? What was it like?
So, looking back now, I've really been asked this a lot in, like, in recent interviews and right now, it's very, very odd, but at that time, we had no frame of reference, so it didn't seem odd at all, at least when I started there. Like, if I go to train now and I go to work out at a local ring, I wear shorts or sweats, I throw my knee pads on, sneakers, tank top, or old t-shirt, and you train, you know, you bump around, you hit the ropes. If there's a crash mat, you jump off the ropes, land on the crash mat. You do what you got to do. Mike was there, and when I started, and I'm not sure how long it continued for, but I think whenever he trained guys, at least when I was there, Mike trained you like he was coming out at the Garden. Black boots, black trunks, oiled up. He would often put the armband on, and in hindsight now, it's nuts, but as a brand new green kid that didn't know any better with no frame of reference, it was pretty awesome. But at the very beginning there, he came out and trained like he was going out with the curtain at the Garden, you know?
I love that. Ace, what about you with Iron Mike? What the initial reaction to training with him?
Well, that shows you that Chris was definitely there before I was, because when I got there, I saw Mike Sharp in the ring maybe one time. Mike Sharp, he never got in the ring. I mean, Mike Sharp is a very nice man, a very honest man, a very hard worker in the ring as far as a talent. He was unbelievable, very underrated. But as far as a wrestling school, when I look back, I'm like, that school stunk as far as a wrestling school. They didn't teach you. There was no promo class. There was no class at all. It was, okay, when you get in the ring, you each take a corner, and you all go in, and you learn from each other. There was no teaching. Mike, I locked up with Mike Sharp at a day camp one time when he got booked for an appearance, and I went along as his crash test dummy. But besides that, that's all that Mike Sharp has ever locked up with me or ever give me any advice or anything. Like it wasn't like, again, not bad mouthing Mike
Sharp.
By the
time you got there, there was a lot more students, and he kind of led it to the guys who just used the ring, you know. But at the very beginning,
it wasn't Bobby Piper, Mike Tarris. I would have no one to practice on back in the
day. At the very beginning, it really was just me, him, and Tom Rumsby, Jack Flash, and it was three people. And I believe he was trying to get a reputation going. So he had to be in that ring training people. And people had to see him actively hands-on training people. And then as time went on and he got more members and guys were able to work with themselves and stuff like that, he phased himself out.
Ace, what led you to him in the beginning to begin with? Like, why did you pick Iron Mike Sharp? Because of the TV notoriety? Because he was local? Or what was the reason?
He was 15 minutes from my house.
Nice.
Man, it was amazing. It was very convenient. And, yeah, it was right there. And Mike gave you a key, too. So you can go anytime you wanted. If you wanted to hook up.
I never got a key.
Uh-oh.
But, yeah.
Mental hazing.
There I go. Ha ha. Yeah. I got a key. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was that. And, you know, Mike was good like that. He let you come in. You can work out. You could use the ring whenever you wanted.
My first ever house show match was 1990. I was only 7 at the Brendan Byrne Arena. First ever match. First guy that came out was Iron Mike Sharp. Of course, he lost to Hercules, but he came out first. And we were with my dad and my dad's friend. And, you know, we're in like the third or second. Or I think we're in the second row and yelling at Mike Sharp. Mike Sharp was getting into it with my dad's friend. I was like, whoa, this is crazy. He is not a small guy, first of all. And second of all, he's getting in the fans' faces. He did not care. What was he really like, though, like attitude-wise? Was he... like brash? I know obviously the OCD issues, but I guess we'll start with Crowbar. Like, what was he actually like, though, personally, like attitude wise?
They're very soft spoken. He had a very strong voice, but still soft spoken, if that makes sense. You agree with that, Mike? You know, like, for sure. A very powerful voice, but it was a very soft delivery, very gentle delivery in like everything that he talked about. And he said, a whole lot. Yeah,
Very kind,
man. But he's great.
Like, really kind, yeah. I really bone his body, you know. Nope. I don't think he wasn't like a vindictive, wasn't like a mean person. He was
not
very
at all.
Nice,
no.
Gentle.
Not at all.
I just love that, you know, obviously he's keeping kayfabe. Looking back, it's great. As a, you know, at a house show as a kid, you're kind of getting scared of this guy because he's the heel. He's a bad guy, but he's also getting in, you know, in people's faces too. It's like, oh, I don't know if I like this guy. I hope Hercules kicks his ass. I hope he wins. So he was doing a good job kayfabe wise.
Chris, remember Mike Sharp would always talk about that asshole from the Meadowlands that got on his nerves. Remember that?
Yeah.
That was his friend's dad. You know, he's talking about that in class. You know,
oh, yeah. When the OCD stuff did occur, though, what's the brunt of it? Because you always hear stories, but are guys going too far? Are they making it up? You know, you hear certain wrestlers will ham it up like, oh, they locked him in the building. They, you know, he was there overnight. What's the stem of it, and what was really the issues of the OCD stuff that was going on with him?
I remember his bag. Giant hockey goalie bag. If you've ever seen a hockey goalie bag, they're huge because they have to accommodate the leg pads and the helmets and the shoulder pads. And it was like one of those Russian dolls you get, those doll eggs. He opened a big bag, and there was a smaller bag inside the big bag. And inside the smaller bag, there were Ziploc bags. And inside the big Ziploc bags, they were super organized, pristine.
I remember he was a germaphobe before that was even a thing. He would have a pad that he put on the ground if he was going to get. Where'd you go? I'm so dizzy. They put a pad on the ground if he was to put his knee on the ground to like put his boots on because he didn't want his knee to touch the ground. I remember we were at a TV taping one time and he had a cup of coffee in it, one of those little stirrers in it. And he started stirring it really, really fast. And we talked for about 15 minutes. And the entire conversation, he's stirring a cup of coffee just like this as fast as he can for the entire conversation. But, yeah, he did get locked in the belt. He definitely did get locked in the building one time because he was taking a shower. I've been to TV with him before. And everybody loved Mike. Like all the agents, like Tony Garea, all the guys. When Mike walked in, they're like, oh! You know, they're all like making the Mike Sharp mannerisms and I remember one time Mike Sharp, this was in 92 in July, I did my first TV and Mike Sharp brought me up to Bret Hart and he goes to Bret, he goes, oh, Bret, oh, this is one of my students. Tell him how I used to beat you up. Tell him how I used to beat you. Tell him I was a star back in the day. He's making a joke. And Bret Hart goes, yeah, I used to beat the hell out of his forearm with my head.
That was great. The strap, if you will, on yeah. on the forum.
But Mike was he was a hard hitter in the ring too, a yeah. hard hitter.
Canada's greatest athlete.
Yeah.
When you look at it, right, he's quote unquote an enhancement guy, but you didn't really look at him like that, right? Because you just looked at him like this guy is your connection to WWF, right?
I mean, I looked at him as a talent. You know, there's job guys. You know, like there's job guys, and then there's workers who lose matches. Yeah, I think there's definitely a big difference.
Yeah.
Like Mike Sharp could go in there and have a 20-minute match at anybody. You know, Barry Horowitz could go in there and have a 20-minute match at anybody.
Yep. I've gained a much larger appreciation for Mike's body of work later on, like even now.
Oh, yeah.
I'll hop on the bike, do cardio, and I'll watch like the old school stuff on the network, you know, the arena shows. And I'm not being an old head saying this or not. When you do a lot of the modern moves, big sky high, big power bomb, boom, you land. One, two, and the both guys lay there. And it's great, and it looks impressive and all that. But if you've ever been in the ring, the way Mike just didn't stop, like to go out there and stomp and forearm and kick and whip off and get knocked down and get – Mike Sharp never stopped. He never did anything super big. But in order for an athlete, if you've never been in a pro wrestling ring, if you've never wrestled – in order to work that style requires incredible stamina and cardiovascular training. And on top of that, I don't know, you know, Mike, sometimes when you get out there, you're blown up, you're tired, and you try to interact with the crowd, you're tired, you don't want to do it. Mike did all that on top of screaming and yelling nonstop like a maniac. And I watch it now and I say, wow, that guy could effing go. I mean, like go and not get tired. A cardiovascular monster. If you could really break down how moves are done and how selling is done like that, he was amazing.
What do you think?
Do you agree with that, Mike?
Oh, I was going to say before you were done, before you got to the point about how he was yelling and screaming the entire time, I was going to add that to it. That'll blow you up. Just doing that.
Yeah.
I wish when I was 17, 18, 19 at school, I just knew Mike Sharp from the WWF, you know, through all the social media and all the just how pro wrestling is at our fingertips now and the history. And I know so much more about Mike's career now. I wish I knew that then so I could have picked his brain a little bit and asked him more about the business of pro wrestling, because that's something that we never really even talked about.
Never learned really.
In wrestling school. Because you know Mike was everywhere. Mike was everywhere. Mike did a lot. He teamed up.
We never even learned a handshake
in Japan.
That guy never even showed us a handshake.
He never taught us Carney. Stevie Richards taught me Carney. We're in Seaside. He starts talking Carney. I'm like, what are you saying? Stevie Richards taught me Carney. Shout out to my buddy Stevie.
Wow. So he didn't even like break it down for you as far as like.
Now he didn't smarten us up really. Nah.
Wow.
Well, he did.
Why not?
It being a work and it
of course, not yeah. being
work, but as far as like the business, like, you know, there's different educations that a trainer should give you. And just, you know, there's, you know, how to conduct yourself in the locker room, how to conduct yourself on the road, how to, you know, certain things. And as far as the business of pro wrestling, that was never taught to us.
Why not though? How come it's just escaped him, or he didn't want to divulge too much, or what was the reason?
I don't know. The world will never know.
Yeah, it goes in a secret way with him as he passed away. It's interesting. He
Seriously,
never got an
yeah.
action figure. If you think about it, should have got an action figure. He was there for so long.
I think they can make one now, and it would be hot. It'd be a rare, hot new. Well, they made a lot of guys. They never made him. I really think an Iron Mike Sharp action figure would sell.
Like Outback Jack had his own figure, but Iron Mike Sharp, he'd be
Mike Sharp way Outback more recognizable. Jack.
And yeah. beat him a bunch. Yeah, so it's weird. It's like, interesting. Definitely should have gotten a figure.
Mike didn't have that theme song that Outback had.
Man, well, yeah, that theme song.
That was a catchy tune, man. Yeah. I know you all know the words. Come on, sing it with me.
Timey kangaroo down. Timey kangaroo down.
I was literally listening to that song before because I was looking up Outback Jack. From Humpty Doo, Australia, yeah.
There you go.
man, just it's such a perfect guy for that era, though, Iron Mike Sharp. You know what I mean? That he just fit that era of WWF so perfectly. Does he actually help you guys when you guys start getting matches? Is he the one that is the in, the connection, or no?
No.
Not for me personally, no.
Wow, surprise. So he trained you, right, Crowbar? But he didn't actually, like, bridge the gap to get you in the door?
Not really, no.
I think it's more looked at now as more of a business, like the indies, and back when we were breaking, it seemed like it was just the big leagues, or you were just doing as minor league as Outlaw Mud Show as you could get. Now it seems like everyone's working for a company. Everyone's working on TV. Everyone's working in front of a camera, in front of a large crowd. So I think nowadays that stuff is more instilled in you during your training than it was before, because what do you need to do? Tell us how to go make $50 on an indie show, you know, two Saturdays a month, rather than now you start wrestling, you're going to be working, you know, for companies. But you mentioned, did Mike Sharp get you matches? I was just turned 18 years old. We were in the Asbury Park Convention Center, and WWF was there for a house show. And I went because, you know, I'm from Jersey, and Tony Garea was there. I'm the one who went up to Tony Garea, and I said, you know, I'm one of Mike Sharp's students. If you ever need enhancement guys, I think we talked about this before, John. If I'm repeating myself, I'm sorry, but if you ever need enhancement guys, you know, I'd love to work for you. And then the next day in class, Mike Sharp's like, who told Tony Garea I have a school? So I did. But then we started getting booked.
Wow, that's crazy, though, that Garea wouldn't even know that Iron Mike Sharp had a school, and he's, you know, greets him every time he sees him backstage. Mm-hmm. Crowbar, true. Is that one of those things where he's trying to keep the school kayfabe from WWF for some odd note and reason?
In hindsight, I have no idea. I know there's a lot of weird backstage. I know, like, reasons to do this or that. A lot of the old school guys, although they were very friendly, they were all very suspicious of one another, and they kept things close to the vest. I have no idea what his exact motivation would have been to not let out that he had a school, but apparently he had a reason.
Ace, if you look at it, like look at the Italian Stallion or George South. Hey, by the way, you know, Tony Garea, I have all these guys. And then he'd collect some money from those guys and take them to the show. I mean, yeah. There's like a business to it that he should have created.
I mean, one could argue, and again, I don't know if this would be the reason or not. Maybe he wanted to make some money on the school, but at the same time, if he starts to train some good, competent wrestlers at that time, Mike Sharp was an enhancement guy, a very well-known enhancement guy, but he's still an enhancement guy. Now you have some more bodies out there that could potentially do your job that are younger. I'm not saying that that's the motivation, but could it potentially be? Sure.
Ace,
wrestling career like that, you know?
Wouldn't that be perfect, Ace, if like he would help somebody else get along with you know, with him almost?
Again, I don't know if that's the reason, but I can see it.
Or another thing, too, I'm thinking is that we were very green. We're very green. Like, none of us – there wasn't 15 shows every weekend back in 1992.
Nah.
We were very, very green. And maybe felt like we weren't ready. Maybe he didn't want to put a stamp on his guys, and we go up there and embarrass him. I don't know. It's not like the podcast business, John. Like, you and I, we work together hand in hand. We help each other out. Pro wrestling isn't always like that, buddy.
And I guess, like, you're kind of right, because he was probably there, what, to like 95, basically, doing enhancement matches. So he was there, even though, you know, even if you guys are kind of swinging into your prime a little bit, he was still there.
Yeah, he was on the twilight of his career. It was his last years.
He didn't want you to steal a spot. He didn't want Ace Darling to steal any spot.
You said that, not me.
Maybe. You know, I'm saying that it's totally feasible, you know?
I think so many people remember you guys from WCW, from Nitro, from Wrestling Hall of Nash, the Outsiders, the NWO. How the hell, I guess we'll start with Crowbar. How did that even come about? I know you have, I guess, somewhat of a relationship, or had a relationship maybe with Sullivan. Who gets you guys in the door?
I went down first via Kevin Sullivan through Tony Rumble and Dennis Carluzzo somehow. And I was there originally as a cruiserweight guy, wrestled Conan, wrestled Eddie Guerrero on the Saturday Night Show, went to ECW for maybe a year, just under a year. And then we formed a tag team. And we get a lot of bookings up in the Boston area. You know, Tony Rumble knew Kevin Sullivan well. Kevin had seen us up there. And, you know, one day we just got the call. I don't even remember exactly how it all came to pass. I think it was Tony Rumble, maybe.
Yeah, it was. I kept saying, Kevin, yeah. You got anything for you? Can you use me? Can you use me? He's like, I don't have a spot for you. And I'm like, can you just bring me up and let me work? And I just want to be in the mix. He's like, well, I can't give you a contract right now, but if you want to come up and do TV, absolutely. And then before we knew it, we were booked on a lot of TVs.
Yeah.
We were booked so much that we got booked for that Disney, that like long, like 30 days in Disney. And we had to say no, cause we had college at the time. So and we're taking summer classes. So we couldn't do that. I look back, can't look back with hindsight, but that 30 days in Disney, we would have had some fun those days.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been awesome. So how does the Outsiders tag match come about, though? How do they put you on Nitro for that tag match for that?
So we did a few matches. See, I knew
back-to-back weeks, Kevin, yeah.
I worked Kevin Nash doing TV for WWE.
Yep.
And I knew Scott Hall there. Scott Hall was always super cool to me when I was doing TV for WWE. Always super. Like just he'd put his bag right next to you and change next to you and say, how's your day? And tell me, you know, he just talk to you and get to know you. So I always had, you know, a lot of respect for both those guys. And Kevin loved me because I took this crazy bump for him on Nitro one time. Literally, he grabbed me by the throat and he chokeslammed me. I took this huge bump over the top rope. You ever see that bump, Chris?
Yeah, yep.
Okay. So I took this huge bump for him, and he never forgot that. And we did a few matches for WCW. I think the first TV we worked with High Voltage.
Yeah.
And I worked with Glacier that night, and you had a singles match. You worked with Eddie again.
Yeah, yep.
And then we got booked for a few more. And once again, college came up. You went up to TV. I couldn't. And we got booked. We were told the Steiners, and we got there. It was Hall and Nash. I think that's how it was. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it was what it was. And then 2 weeks later, we're in the airport. And he and I, we were too young to even rent cars back then.
Yeah.
So we're walking to the airport and we hear, hey, look around, it's Kevin Nash. He's sitting down.
He's having a rematch.
Yeah, he's sitting, he's as tall as we are. And we were standing up. And he's like, where are you guys going? I'm like, we're trying to get to the hotel or the arena. He's like, you're coming with me, boys. So we came with him. He's like, you're wrestling us tonight. And I go, no, I think you saw it on Saturday night. It said, and on Nitro, Devin Storm and Ace Dong versus the Steiners or something like that. That there's something in the air that we were supposed to wrestle someone else.
Yeah.
He's like, who do you think's booking around here? He goes, you guys wrestling me again tonight. All right.
Yeah.
Now, what's up with the name? Why do they call you the Extreme? Technically, you guys were the Extremist, right? They kind of changed it up. Well, why the Extreme?
Why do you think?
To make fun of ECW.
There you go.
Yeah.
Nice. So it's that simple. Okay.
Oh, they never told us that, but they said we're from Stamford, Connecticut. We're called the Extreme. And we got our asses kicked. What do you think? That's a rib.
Yeah.
That's a rib and a rib and a rib.
Yeah. Now, that's a rib. Triple layer rib,
yeah,
sandwich there.
Did you mind Crowbar doing the jobs like in that fashion? I know they're the tag team champions for the tag titles technically. Did you mind though that rib or the job or no?
I was happy just to be out there playing around at that time. You too, you agree, man? It was just really cool. Yeah.
You know, and not only that, but it really helped on the indies. Like we'd go to any show together, and people would be like, "Oh, you want Starcade this weekend?" You know, like just because we were getting, you know, we weren't featured in a prominent role. When we got to the smaller shows, we were huge. You know, the TV experience was huge for us. You know, we're selling a ton of pictures. It would have been nice to get in there and show them more what we can do and be used in a better position. Like we had some good match. We got to wrestle Public Enemy, And, you know, and then we'd get booked on the indies, and the main event would be me and Chris versus Public Enemy. Because, you know, now we're WCW guys now. Even though we're just, you know, oh, we got our asses kicked on Nitro, doesn't matter. Now we're WCW guys. So now, you know, you're going to see us on Saturday
night. On a poster, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, sure, we just lost to Renegade and Joe Gomez, but in, you know, bumfuck Pennsylvania, we're on the top of the card. So it helped with the indies, yeah, for sure.
Big time, yep.
Desperado Joe Gomez was no slouch. Come on.
Joe's a good dude.
Love Despy. Yeah. Yeah, he's great. Yeah. Now it's interesting.
How'd you like working with the Renegade, Chris?
Yeah, what do you think about that?
He was something.
he was
something.
With though, like you're saying, like it's almost like a resume builder because people see you on Nitro. Nitro was the number one show. That was during the 83 weeks of dominance. They were, you know, the hottest show in wrestling. So even if you guys are doing jobs, or even if you're losing on TV, you're losing to the NWO, the Outsiders, the tag champs, and you're getting TV time during, you know, an awesome period for wrestling where everybody was watching back then.
Yep.
Another thing is like Chris went on to do a lot more than I did, and he got to go on TV and be featured and make a name for himself. For someone like me, if I didn't do that WCW TV, yeah, we did some WWF TV together as well, he and I. But if I didn't do that, like if you mentioned my name, someone outside the Northeast wouldn't even know the hell I was. Now, if you were a wrestling fan in the 90s, you know, you mentioned my name, you pretty much, you haven't, oh, I heard of that guy before, you know?
Yeah.
Like when I reach out to guys to do interviews for my you know, YouTube show. If I say, oh, like, yeah, I remember your name. Like, if I wasn't on, you know, that had that little bit of TV, people wouldn't probably even know who the hell I was.
It's cool because I'm like a New Jersey guy, obviously, but I was going to the indie shows at that point. It's like, oh my God, Devin Storm. He, you know, he just wrestled in New Jack City Wrestling. come play in our hood. And, you know, there's Ace Starling. Like, I just saw him at the Raritan High School. You know what I mean? It's like, holy shit, they're wrestling the Outsiders. Damn, that's awesome.
Yeah,
City.
Those weekends at that time, outside of the night show, we were going almost every single weekend, you know, two, sometimes three nights, you know, you do Friday, Saturday, sometimes it was a Sunday day. A lot of traveling together, a lot of fun, and it was a really great team. And I probably my favorite style of pro wrestling to this day is still tag team wrestling. It's just kind of a lost art, and I'd love to tag again, but it's with my schedule and life, everything else, it just wouldn't be fair to a partner to, you know, accept, let's explore that on a regular basis with somebody, you know?
Plus, if your partner won't take any bumps, you can't be a tag partner.
Nah, I'd love to tag with Mike, but I know he would never do it. But even like another person at a level. Like I said, I love tag wrestling, but it's just, it would not be fair to another person because my schedule is so hectic and crazy and, you know, things like that. And I wouldn't want to hold somebody down, you know?
Hey,
John, you want to know how busy his schedule, you want to know how busy his schedule is? He blew me off, what, five times to come on the show? Come
that's
on,
true.
How long did it take him to get him to commit to this hour? My
that's
God.
True, that's true. He's too busy. He's too busy.
Unshaven. I got my work clothes on still. I just made this one.
Ace, what do you think about tag wrestling nowadays? Because it is a lost art. Why is it a lost art?
Because there's no tag teams. You know, there's no tag teams. It's putting two single guys together to forward a storyline rather than to get a team over and to get the whole tag team division over. I mean, we got to work with a lot of great tag teams. Me and Chris, we worked with, like we said, Hall and Nash. We worked the Headbangers together. We worked with, name some teams we worked together, Chris. We worked Too Cool together.
Public Enemy.
We worked
Public Enemy,
DOA, the Harris Brothers. You know, we got to work with a lot of great tag teams. But we had to learn from a lot of great tag teams, you know, Midnight Express, Rock and Roll Express, the Rockers, the Hart Foundation, the British Bulldogs. I mean, it wasn't, yeah, it was Dennis Condrey and Bobby Eaton, but they were the Midnight Express. You know what I mean? They were, you don't think of, oh man, do I want to see a headbanger mosh match tonight? No, you know, you don't think like that. When someone was a team, they were a team and they looked like a team. They dressed like a team. And that's what tag team wrestling was. But I mean, and just plus another thing that you'll never see tag team wrestling is the time. You need 15 minutes
to
tell a good story. You know, if you had the Midnight Express right now and the Rock and Roll Express, and you gave them 4 minutes on Raw, I mean, come on. What are they going to do in 4 minutes? They're not even going to warm up in 4 minutes. So that's another thing too. Everything is so rushed and overexposed these days that I don't see a good future for tag team wrestling. Who are the tag team champs right now? Is Damian Priest and Is Damian Priest and Finn Balor a tag team? No,
not really.
It's Damian Priest and Finn Balor. They're doing this to get till they get to the next storyline. You know, they weren't like a team for 10 years before they won the belts.
Does seem like at least Triple H gives them longer matches, though. At least for the most part.
Yeah, I haven't.
Do you watch?
I like your Vikings. I like your Vikings a whole lot. Good gimmick, big guys. Something different stands out. They match. Big fan of the Vikings.
Yeah, it stinks. Ray Rowe, I forget his name on TV. Is it Eric and Ivar or whatever the heck it is? He got hurt. So it's Ivar by himself right now. Yeah, hurt his neck.
I did not know that. Wow. Oh, no.
He's a hell of a big man, though. Ivar.
Ivar?
He's from
the Northeast.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's a big fan of his shows.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a big Boston guy, like that area. He used to do a ton of shows. Yep.
Yep.
Kerber, do you watch a lot of current or no?
I record a lot of it. I watch what I can. I fast forward through. So I don't get the whole story of what's going on with the show, but I'll fast forward. I'll watch for the matches. And if I'm watching for me, like the other night, I was doing cardio, and I don't want to scout an opponent. You know, I was just scouting opponents the past couple of weeks just to become familiar with their moveset and stuff like that. I just wanted to watch wrestling. And I threw on some old school stuff. When I watch it for myself to enjoy as a fan, I'll always throw on something, you know, late 80s or early 90s WCW, WWF. And I'll start off just watching it to enjoy it, but I'll always find something, oh, wow, that was pretty good, and always pick something out of there. You know, but when I will watch modern wrestling just to stay proficient on the style and what guys are doing, so that when I go to a show and I have to work with somebody that's a lot younger than me and they're calling these moves, I know what they are.
When you are watching current wrestling, do you like what you're seeing though, or do you not like, because the style to me, a lot less psychology, a lot less storytelling, and a lot just moves for the sake of moves. Do you like what you're seeing or no?
I'll say this. When I watch it as this event, I think the best time was like that late 80s, early to mid 90s era. The guys were larger than life. The characters were great. The work rate and the psychology was fantastic. There were some big moves. A lot of the moves were a whole lot safer than they are now. When Chris Ford watches pro wrestling as a fan. That being said, you got to evolve or go instinct. So I do watch modern wrestling. I stay proficient in modern wrestling. I watch what these guys are doing on TV. It's not my favorite to watch, but I do watch it and I do follow it. And I try to learn the style and what guys are doing. So, I'm not crapping on it. I just like what I grew up on better. And there's always going to be a nostalgia there. There's always going to be an internal, visceral, like, feeling for something you grew up watching. And you're going to like it better. But it's so I like wrestling of that time a whole lot better. But I watch a lot of modern wrestling.
Ace, do you watch?
Fair.
Yes, very fair, very fair.
I need to Google half the words he said there. What's visceral?
Well, like it is like a like in your gut, you know.
John, he heard that word, and he's been waiting to use it for like 3 weeks now. He's like, yes, I get to use it. No, I don't watch. I watch. no, I don't watch. I was watching a Raw and was it NXT. I was watching some shows. You like that? I was watching some watch-alongs with Rene Dupree, and Raw was the longest 4 weeks of my life. That one episode, you know, it was just brutal. And there's no sound.
You felt it viscerally that it was very long.
I did. I think no one sells and everyone looks like you're, listen, I was 5'10, 5'11, you know, 240 at my biggest, jacked up. But that would be a giant these days. Everyone is just so tiny. Everyone just does a million things. There's no King Kong Bundy said it best. You know, pro wrestling is about physical stature, you know, and you need that. You still need that. Even though, like Chris said, you have to evolve, you have to evolve. You still need stars, and stars got to look a certain way. They can't all look like the guy next door. They can't. Pro wrestling.
To me, the most over guy, Roman Reigns, he wrestles old school, very slow, methodical. I mean, he does have the high spots and the moves in there, but he wrestles like that Hogan style that he kind of popularized, that sports entertainment style. Get the crowd involved, sell psychology.
And he looks like a superhero.
Yeah.
Even that match last year against Sami Zayn, he didn't wrestle for the first 5 minutes. He did nothing. The crowd was going nuts. So I was like, most of these guys in the other company, especially, they'll ignore the crowd. And they'll just fight, spot. He literally just waited and stared at Sami Zayn's wife, got huge heat, stared at somebody else. Like it was really, I was like, wow, this guy's so old school. I love it. Yeah, that's kind of the way, I don't know, to me, that's what guys need to be at the top. And if you're doing it at the top, other guys should be copying that.
Like, I'll give you an example. Like, Seth Rollins is a tremendous athlete, and he's a huge star, and he deserves everything he's got. But, like, he'll do something where he runs over to the guy, he gives the guy a superplex, and he rolls through with it. And then he does that seated thing, and it barely gets a two count. And then within 10 seconds, they're the guys on the offense. You know, it's like these moves just don't mean anything anymore. They just don't. How many super kicks can you see? How many one, two, no can you see? I watched the match with Paul Orndorff and Ricky Steamboat the other night, and I'm not breaking any ground by saying those two are amazing. You know, I'm not – that's not – everyone who knows pro wrestling knows that. But it was just – it was a 20-minute match by two grown men who looked like professional athletes who, if they walked into a gym, you'd say, if you're not a wrestling fan – those guys look like somebody. I'm not sure who they are, but they're somebody. They're not, you know, they're not 300 pounds. They're not 6'10", but they looked like athletes, and they were believable in the ring, and they sold, and they took their time.
I love that. Pretty cool. You're going old school. Steamboat, always a fun watch. Orndorff's awesome too. But if you look at it, and the guys today, like you mentioned with Rollins, are doing a move like a superplex, which Barry Windham, that would be the finish and very believable as a finish, or you know, very good false finish with like Sting and Flair back in the day or something. But he gets out of immediately. Then he does the Falcon Arrow, which is another finisher, and then the guy kicks out immediately. Yeah, it's just, I don't like that style. It just doesn't make sense. And the crowd can't really digest it either. Yeah. I know, Crowbar, you can wrestle that style, though, still.
Yeah, I said, I enjoy the older style. I enjoy everything that goes with it. But when I'm out there doing shows now, what the modern style is what it is. So I try to wrestle that style, and I try to bring little components of that old school into my matches wherever I can. And I think they stand out, and they make my matches different.
Now, you wrestled everywhere, literally. You can probably list every company and you worked there. You had a WCW contract. Do the younger guys ask you advice or no? Because I'm hearing from some of the stars of yesteryear, the young guys today don't even ask the older guys for advice. You know what I mean? They don't ask veterans for advice. Do they ever ask you for advice?
They do. I think I'm pretty approachable in the locker room. I'm real happy-go-lucky. And I'll talk and I'll give advice often, and often it's well received, and other times you could just tell that it goes in one and we're not together. But I'm always happy to help whenever, you know, and it's either in ring or career advice. I always tell guys, make sure you have another career. And I'll say, I am now doing this like 33 years, and at the peak of my career, I had an almost 3-year run with WCW. I go, I had 3 titles there, the hardcore, the tag team, cruiserweight title. Would you consider that being successful? Would you be happy with something like that? And they all said, yes. I said, fair, very fair enough. That's great. Okay. In those 3 years that I did that, I in no way, shape, or form made enough money to sustain me for the rest of my life. Forget a family. I go, so you got to find something else to do. I get really hot when you hear people like, I don't even know who, like you go on YouTube, you see these motivational videos, or, you know, you see a lot of these Arnold videos. You got to put all your energy into one goal, because if you have plan B, you're admitting defeat. You got to put everything in it to one goal. Well, that's easy. That's hell. You're Arnold. You made it. You know, you movie star, bodybuilding, real easy for you to say, but for every guy like that made it, there's thousands that don't. And you want to set what people, I say, reach for the stars, go for your goal, put everything you have, but you have to have a plan B. And if you want, to be successful bad enough, there is time to do it. I pursued pro wrestling at the same time that I pursued physical therapy. And that was at the time when there was no online classes. You had to go and go in and do the work and drive. I just had no social life. Ask Mike, right? The after show, we never really did much. I never did much. I drove to the show and I drove home and, you know, went to school during the week like you did, and weekend came, we did our stuff, and there's very little social time there.
Well, I remember.
So I advise guys to do both, you know, to find something else.
I remember we wrestled in Pittsburgh for the light heavyweight division, WWF, and I drove back the whole night through, because you had to get to class the next morning. So that's the sacrifices people make, not just for pro wrestling, but for real life stuff. Like Chris is a success story in wrestling and out of wrestling. So anyone needs advice, you definitely go to him. You know, he got his college degree. We both got our college degrees. But he runs a very successful business. It's not just all or nothing. Like you said, all eggs in one basket. No, because if that was the case, you know, where would someone be today if you want to be something in this world? You know, Chris had the opportunity to be.
And it is easier to do today. No, I'm saying the thing, but guys will say, oh, that's too hard. You can't. It's easier today than it was way back then. There's so many options to take online courses, certifications, whatever. You know what I mean? It's way easier than it was.
And let's face it, 99.999% of you, all the guys we see on these indie shows, you're not going to make it. You're not going to make it. I was extremely talented. Not being cocky. I was extremely talented. I had a lot of buzz. I was one of the top guys in Northeast. I didn't make it. Thank God I have a college degree. You know, and now there's so many guys out there. There's only so many spots to make a decent living. And if you make it, guess what? You're making it for a year. You're making it for 2 years. You're making it for 3 years.
3 years top, yeah.
50 more years to live, people. 60 years more to live. You know, you definitely need the education. You know, getting the college degree is the greatest thing I ever did. Because if you told me in 1995 that I wasn't going to be a famous pro wrestler, I would have said, you're crazy. But it's entertainment. subjective. It's entertainment.
Everybody that ran in our group, we always say it, Mike was the most talented one out of all of us. All of us. He just didn't get that break, unfortunately, but he was by far the best, by far the most talented, the greatest wrestler of our whole guys, our whole group of guys that was running at that time. Just didn't happen.
Well, Ace, he really put you over strong there. And you told me.
I always do. Without a doubt. We all talk. All the guys, he'll never say, but all the guys that ran at our time when we talk now and we collectively discussed the whole thing, the greatest, the best. Crime that he never got the opportunity.
Wow. And he privately kind of put you down to me. So, wow, interesting. He put you over. And then you
click record.
Oh. Now, Ace, would you agree? Better than Mike Quackenbush? Better than Lance Diamond? Are you agreeing with all this? The Inferno Kid? Better than Inferno Kid?
I'm not saying I'm better than everybody. I am saying I'm better than Mike Quackenbush, though.
Okay.
I love Mike Quackenbush. He's a friend of mine. Again, it's do you like vanilla or do you like chocolate? You know, do you like Star Wars or Star Trek? It's entertainment, man.
Worse.
Oh, you know who I'm going to message? I'm going to reach out tomorrow to Julio De Niro. I'm going to say, you know, Ace Darling said he was way better than you.
Oh, God. There's no. Okay. I'm going on record. I'm better than Julio. You can tell
him
I said that.
Oh, my God.
Please tell him I said that. Hello, Mike Beraldo. It's Julio De Niro. How you been? That'd be the call I get, but he's a good dude.
Is it true that you said?
Yeah.
Hey, that's pretty good praise, though, because that was a good talent pool, I think, in the Northeast at that point, big time.
You know what's crazy is we had a great group, but like you mentioned some guys. It's crazy how many guys did not get picked up in the Northeast, though. You know, you had the California crew. A lot of them got picked up. You have the Carolina crew. They got picked up.
Yep.
It's crazy that a lot of the Northeast guys didn't.
Yeah, like Reckless Youth probably should have made it, right? I mean, and he didn't really make it either.
Yeah.
I think he got signed, just not brought up, right?
Yeah, he was a part of that fucking dojo camp, yeah.
He was very talented.
Yep.
Very talented.
Big time.
The technician Tom Carter. Yeah, he was, you know, in ROH and stuff, but and he was a part of the Funky Dojo and stuff, but yeah, he never really made it, like as far as getting that big time TV push.
Someone like him would do very good today.
Yes.
Yeah. Big time.
He would be a regular sized guy today. He wouldn't be a cruiserweight.
Yep.
You know, he's someone take half the guys who are on top today, take Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and bring them to WWF TV with me in 1993. And they're getting 3 minutes with the head shrinkers. But that's all, you know, it's just a different, business.
Yeah, I say this.
Tom Carter. I said Tom Carter.
Can you say
you go.
Big today. Huge. Let's say it's the biggest mind. Can you say mind fuck? I just said mind fuck. So wrestling today at around 225, 230, when we came up, before we were a team, and me and Mike were the opening match on every independent card, and we were by far the smallest guys in that locker room. We were small guys. And when we were a tag, we were a rockers, rock and roll-esque type tag. We were small guys doing, you know, flying around, quick tags, stuff like that. When I do shows now, I'm one of the biggest guys in the locker room, and it's nuts. And newer guys will refer to me as, oh, I mean, you're a big guy to be doing that. You're a big guy. And it really is, again, a total mind fuck, because when I came up, it literally was a land of giants, big giant muscle guys that were like, you know, 6'3", 6'4", 6'5". On the regular, and I was one of the smallest, skinniest guys. And now I'm one of the bigger guys around. So it's really changed a lot.
Yeah, well, big time. I mean, like back in the day when Bam Bam would be on the indie scene, you know what I mean? Like that he's a big boy, but then everyone else is so much smaller. Nowadays, if you look at the indie scene, let's just say, like, not Brian Danielson doesn't really work indies, but let's say he's out there. He's not a small guy, but if you put him back with Bam Bam in 98, you know, he's super small. I mean, he's one of the smallest by far, and he'd get destroyed. He'd be a jobber.
And I do think that the bigger guys in this day and age, they are underutilized and underappreciated as well. And there's nothing wrong with it. I love high spots. I love extreme style stuff. I love basing for high spots. But I feel sometimes with the bigger guys are kind of shoved to the side because promoters or other wrestlers assume that they can't do the modern style and that's all that fans want to see. Where meanwhile, there are some very, very talented bigger guys out there. And I think maybe the younger guys want to see, not the wrestlers, the fans might want to see all the guys doing the high spots and aerial stuff like that. But the guys buying the tickets, the parents that still have watched wrestling from back in the day, appreciate the bigger guys being out there, you know, and I think they should be used a whole lot better. That's all.
If I ran an indie show, you know what I'd do? I've always thought this. I'd say to the guys in the locker room, no matter what you guys do tonight, it's not going to make a damn difference anywhere in the wrestling business, except for the 47 people that are out here tonight. Call it all in the ring. Learn how to work. Call it in the ring. Every match tonight, call it in the ring. Call it in the ring. What do you got to lose? Guys don't know how to do that.
Definitely not.
Because you're doing that modern day style, that high flying modern day style.
Even WWE, I saw it. There was a mistake in a match, and it was a veteran, quote unquote veteran, against a younger person. They did the spot, they missed it. They just rewound and went back and did the spot exactly the same. I was like, oh my God. Like, it looks so bad. Like, you can't do that. Just go, you know what I mean? Have an ad lib, call it in the ring, and change it up. They went right back to the same exact spot. Oh, took me, you know, right out of the match. You're just like, oh, come on. Like, just, I mean, you know, it's a work, but it's just like that was just terrible. You can't just go back to the same exact spot and do it all over again.
Mike knows me though. I can call it in the ring. I can ad lib when there's a mistake, but I am a very photographic regiment. I am one of those guys that likes to know or at least have a blueprint or a skeleton of how the match goes. And way back in the day, I got heat for being a guy that wanted to know boom, 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 boom. It's just how my brain works. And I still try to work like that. And a lot of the younger guys do work like that. So when we discuss a match, at first, if they don't know me, they're like, well, do you want to call it in ring? Do you want to? I gotta go, no, I like being boom, boom, boom. And usually on their side, it's a sigh of relief. I said, I totally get it. I like calling a match that way too. Back in the day, I used to get a lot of heat for calling a match like that. So it's just how your brain works. But if you do call a match like that, you need to be able to adjust on the fly as well. And I think I could do that as well.
I know Macho Man obviously liked to have it planned out, but you could never tell. I'm very much
like that.
But you could never tell it was planned out. And you could tell he was also doing other stuff in between, getting the crowd involved, making sure they popped at certain spots. And if they didn't, you could see he takes it back and he does something else. And he planned it, but not like today where there are robots out there. I mean, he's very limber, and you can't even tell with what he's up to.
Yep.
That Randy Savage guy, he wasn't half bad. He was pretty good.
Yeah, remember that guy? He was actually pretty good.
My favorite.
He was a pretty good draw with money too, because that Mega Powers guys, those Hogan and Savage guys, threw a lot of money together. Yeah.
Yeah, man. There'll never be another Macho Man.
No. I always say if you did a blueprint of the perfect professional wrestler, it would probably be Macho Man, because the look, the talking, the promos, the wrestling, his punch, just the way he carried himself, his charisma. Like, if you were actually gonna put all the pieces together, it's probably Macho Man. It's like the perfect wrestler.
Quick, fast, and aggressive. And I've said it over and over again. Hypothetically, if he was still alive and he did all his stuff exactly the same, like the way he punched, the way he elbowed, the way he moved, the way he jumped off the rope, the way his mannerisms, his promo, if he knew how to base for or take modern moves, and he kept all his stuff exactly the same, he would hold up 1,000%.
Absolutely. And believability, man, he was believable. Yes.
Oh yeah,
you never saw through his stuff. You never saw through his stuff. You never saw through his moves. And that finish, think about it. It was a flying elbow off the top. Imagine what that does to your body, night in, night out. That's your finish. You know, your finish isn't the full Nelson. Your finish isn't a bear hug. Your finish is a top rope elbow. That's brutal on your body. Brutal.
Even the leg drop for Hogan, the spine is crunching. When you think about it, not a great finish to have, especially since he went over every night too. You know, he's going over 150 times a year and constantly going down on your spine like that. Not good. As we head towards the finish here, as we head towards the wind down, Ace, you got to end this retirement and you got to reform the Extremist. You agree?
I agree that your listeners need to tune into my YouTube channel. Is now a good time for a plug?
Sure. You're going to ignore the return. Right. Yes.
I am. Make sure when you're done watching the Two-Man Power Trip, John Paz, make sure you check out Wrestling Then and Now on YouTube. Wrestling Then and Now. I have almost 8,000 subscribers. At a record-setting month right now. It's really going well. I have guests on. I post videos every single day. So please, check it out. Give me a subscribe. I would really appreciate it. And I'm never wrestling ever again. Never in a million years. Never in a million years would I ever even think of stepping foot in the ring ever again.
Crowbar, good night, folks. What do you think?
We'll end it here. Good night. Boop.
Crowbar, he should return to ISPW, right?
Okay. You're never going to see it. But selfishly, I would love it one more time on him, but I know it's not going to happen. And I know it's for good reason. And I get why. I just miss my friend. And some of the best times in my entire career was with him. I always tear up when I talk about him.
Come here. Give me
some of the best times of my entire career was with this guy. With the car trips, the laughs, with the stories, and all these years later, we still either talk or text regularly. And it's, you know, you in a pro wrestling, you might get a minuscule, tiny handful of people you could call friend, and I could call him brother. So it's huge win. I love this guy.
Awesome.
Think about it too. You guys team from the basically early to mid 90s to like mid 2000s into the end of the 2000s. So long tag team run for the Extremists, the Extreme, very long.
Yep.
We had a lot of good matches. And like Chris said, we had a lot of great times. And yeah, I wouldn't trade him for nothing. I never made money in wrestling, but I definitely made a few good friends. And he's on the top of the list, man. Great dude. Great father, great businessman, great family man.
You too, man. Oh, thank you.
Corbo, working.
It's a mutual admiration society going on today. This is great. But with the singles matches and just the tag matches, and I'm not blowing smoke up our own ass. On the indies, look, we had some freaking amazing tag matches, and it just never came to pass on the bigger stage. But I put our tag work up against anybody's. I think it was that good.
Where can everybody find you, Crowbar?
You can find Crowbar on Wrestling Then and Now. He's been there once by himself and once with Alan Funk.
I'm sure I'll be there again. Yes.
If you want to know about Crowbar, head over to Wrestling Then and Now. Thank you, folks.
I answer a lot of questions there.
that's twice like that.
I really just do my my Twitter, and I'm on very sporadically. Like once in a while, I'll post, and somebody will reply. Oh, like never got back to me. I literally, if I'm on the toilet, if I have a very small lapse in time at work or here or there, I'll throw something up or I'll post something or I'll reply, and I might not be back on for hours and hours and hours. But the one place that I'm probably on the most and I update the most would be my X account, formerly known as Twitter, @WCW Crowbar.
Awesome. Crowbar, Ace, Darling, The Extremist, The Extreme. Guys, thank you so much for all the time tonight. Really appreciate it.
Awesome.
It was fun, man.
Thanks, John. Always fun talking
to you. And go to Wrestling Then and Now.
Yeah.
Say again.
Hit up Wrestling Then and Now.
Wrestling Then and Now.
Let's scream it from the rooftops, folks.
Thank awesome. You. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.